Now that you face another day.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you need when what you really want inside can only people.
Where do you want to be?
Where you want to be?
What your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a red disease.
I'm running like a red disease. Get your people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. I hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, needed to do, should do, better do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, I know you got it done anyway, because you don't procrastinate. You don't put stuff off. You get it done regardless. And I love that. I love that in you. So always make sure we get it done. Brothers and sisters, once again, you're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed on it, and then click on that and check out previously recorded programs that are dated and titled. There are other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Monday evenings, all times I'm going to give are Eastern times, so you adjust accordingly. Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia. Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. Revive, Wednesday, 8 to 10. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening. That's right, time for an awakening on Fridays, 8 p.m. with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday morning, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., that's right, brothers and sisters, it ain't me. It is Sister POC and her program, Revive, on a Sunday morning, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. until it is, once again, time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American, African-owned businesses. It is the largest online marketplace for American, African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Also, if you're in the Atlanta area at the Greenbrier Mall, they have a kiosk there where you can pick up laundry detergent, soaps, toothbrushes, razors, batteries, man, all kind, liniment, all kind of stuff. They're ever expanding. But if you can't, go to the website, WeBuyBlack.com. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. My good brother, Bomani Tahembe. And he is going to have a trip going to Africa in May. And you want to be a part of that group, go online and check him out. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Or give him a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. If you want to check out photos from previous tours, the latest ones he had was back in November and May of last year. That would be on facebook.com/Bomani. Or if you want to check out video, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. books. It is so important that we read, brothers and sisters. I know a lot of us don't want to read. But if you don't want to read, you can always go online. I know. And that's cool. But hey, we need to read. We need to increase our book. We need to increase our consciousness. And the only way to do that is getting information. And one of the prime sources of information for us as a people is the Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End area here in Atlanta. On Abernathy Boulevard, 946 Ralph David Abernathy, to be exact. The number to call is 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676. And yes, they have books, they have furniture, they have artwork, they have clothing, they have a whole array of stuff. They have a African Holocaust Museum. Also, too, they have a class every Saturday, Black History class of Know Thyself, conducted by Baba Olatunji. And does an outstanding job. The class is free every Saturday, and it's from 1:30 p.m. until 3:30 p.m. And also, too, but if you want to increase your library, there's a multimedia library. That's right, a digital resource of over 100,000 files on our history and culture, over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. It is, brothers and sisters, 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment. Check them out. Check with Brother Olatunji. And the number to call at the Shrine to talk to Brother Olatunji is 404-444-6696. 404-444-6696, or email him at talkingdrum@live.com. Talkingdrum@live.com. Other bookstore is the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, that which is right by WeBuyBlack.com. So it's cool that they're pretty much together, is the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. And if they don't have the book that you're looking for, yes, they'll get it for you. Also, to Black Dot, Black Dog Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother, Brother Jamu. And the number to call is 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. And if he doesn't have that book that you're looking for, he'll get it for you. He also has the Red, Black, and Green Shoes. The Red, Black, and Green Shoes will also be at the Shrine and be at his place. And he, if you don't have the size, they'll get them for you. Because you know why? There is light in the Black Dot. There is light. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Us Lifting Us. Go to usliftingus.com. Learn more about Us Lifting Us as an economic cooperative, the alternative, and something that we need as a people, and become a member. And also, too, if you're in the Atlanta area, check out the cafe. It's not just that we pull our money together and say this, that, another. No, we have done it. And we have a cafe in the Atlanta area. 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza, 2036 Sylvan Road, and we sell coffee. We have Cameroon, Tanzanian, Kenyan, Ethiopia, where coffee originates. We have other brands of coffee. Yesterday when I was in the cafe, we had, we had Brazilian coffee. Yeah. And so we always, and we have loose teas and so forth. So check out Us Lifting Us in the, if you're in the Atlanta area, at 2036 Sylvan Road, Cafe Ulu. Also, too, at Cafe Ulu, we sell ambrosia. Brother Novak Young had a friend visiting, and she bought a gallon of ambrosia to take back with her to share with her friends and the organization workers, and I'm quite sure they're going to love it. It's delicious. Ambrosia, CompleteOneBeauty.com. CompleteOneBeauty.com to check out Brother Novak Young and his delicious drink, Ambrosia. Ackerman Institute and Ackerman House. Also, too, Baba Mwali Mubarudi will be having a PowerPoint presentation on the elements of warriorhood Saturday, July 19th. Saturday, July 19th from 5 to 9. At Wadada Health Market and Juice Bar. Wadada is located in the West End again at 878 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. And that's going to be Saturday, January 19th. Saturday, January 19th. And then on Saturday, February 2nd, his lovely wife, Ya Baruti, is a Sisters Only, African Sisters Only, discussing the navigating the challenges of African womanhood, featuring yoga with Mama Yemi and a sister circle, Saturday, February 2nd from 5 to 9 at Wadada Health Market and Juice Bar, located 878 Ralph David Abernathy in the West End. And then Akabin House Celebration on March 2nd at Sweet Spot, 675 Metropolitan Parkway. This is a little east of the West End, Metropolitan Parkway. This Saturday, I got Brother Chiki Akua is going to be on with us in the second hour. We had African ancestry. Unfortunately, Sister Gina Page had something come up, and so we will have them at a later date. I will inform you again, AfricanAncestry.com. So we will definitely have them in the very immediate future. The ABEN, a Black Education Network, is sponsoring this program. Is Follow the Drinking Gourd to Atlanta, a Black Education Conference, Practices for Teaching Children and Youth of African Ancestry. Tony Browder, Dr. Chiki Akua, Kobe Wilkerson, Dr. Stephen Hancock, and one of the special guests is Dr. Joyce King. So that is this Saturday, 8 a.m. at Auburn Avenue Research Library of American African Culture and History, Auburn Avenue, 101 Auburn Avenue. And that is this Saturday, Daniel. We'll talk more about that with Brother Chiki Akua in the second hour. And I'm looking forward to that conversation, Brother Chiki Akua. Here is our Enyesesim for, I'm going to read the two previous dates because they're very important, as well as today's, which is January 7th. For Saturday, January 5th, Nana Kuntu, Del Jones. January 5th, the key to self-defense against their genocidal designs is knowledge of the intent of our enemy, Nana Kuntu. Enemies is a term which African warrior scholars need to remember when thinking about Europeans and other people who have proven their malicious intent relative to us. It can become instrumental in helping to frame our thinking in terms of our missions. At the same time, we have to think about how this term affects others in our community not as knowledgeable of our history and our story. When you use the word enemy in reference to Europeans in conversations with Negroes or lost souls, they flinch, tense up, and instinctively feel repulsed by your utterance. They cannot conceptually conceive of Europeans in such terms. In their minds, the question becomes, how can the people who birthed you into a civilization from barbarism, who nurtured you into a progressive conscious intelligence from a primitive ignorance, who so generously shared their sperm and blood with you, who gave you the gift of salvation, be the same people trying to destroy you? The concept of enemy cannot make sense to them. And until we fully comprehend the depth of this very basic menticidal confusion, they will remain a dangerous enigma to us. I repeat, until we fully comprehend the depth of this very basic menticidal confusion, they will remain a dangerous enigma to us. Once understood, Europeans become little more than frightened, reactive children we have to tolerate when we, as a people, identify and confront and neutralize our enemies. Affirm, I know my enemies. Affirm, I know my enemies. January 6th. Our problem is the disintegration of a sense of peoplehood. Nana Belfour, Dr. Asa Hilliard. Sometimes we have to build family anew.
There are warriors who have been rejected by immediate blood because of their commitment to be African. Fear of the unknown and unknown, fear of the known and unknown drives those without knowledge of self harshly against those with it. We can allow other fears distract us from building healthy, whole African families. We're not trying to fool ourselves with false sense of personal heroism and delusions of being guerrillas for a people's conscious of their physical, psychological, and spiritual destruction. For we know, or at least we should know, that the vast majority of African people want little, if anything, to do with Africa or anything to do with Africans. On this point, we must be truthful. If we thoughtfully and objectively consider virtually any observable measure of our condition in this culture waste, this cultural wasteland, be it real or imagined, as a people, we continue to sink deeper and deeper into more and more wretched states of menticide. As a people, we have become willful collaborators in other conspiracies to commit genocide against us. As we re-Africanize nation builders, we do not have to look around the world to see the hatred of many Africans for us. All we need to do is look at our own families and see the hatred for whatever is African that menticide brings. We cannot allow this force us into isolation from the love of family. Sometimes we have to build family anew. Affirm, I am building a healthy, whole African family. Affirm, I am building a healthy, whole African family. January 7th. All unorganized violence is like a blind man with a pistol. Chester Himes. In order to constructively nation build, warriors must have clear lines of defense. Our nation's social and cultural parameters must be established and stated without confusion if warriors are to know what they are defending and fighting against. What is and is not acceptable thought and behavior for African people must be explicitly and succinctly stated. To start, there must be basic fundamental lines of defense drawn around our essence, which cannot be questioned or withdrawn. Otherwise, as we already find too often, warriors end up fighting meaningless battles against each other, fighting to make that which is not us into something African, and fighting alongside those who look like us but work against our liberation. To identify these parameters, warriors must look to our traditions and our way. We must study that which makes us African. Only in this way will we be able to intuitive see that which is inherently African as we forge a new reality out of the old. If nothing else, we will find that only Africans are family, that marriage and children are our utmost priority, that men and women are innately equal, that sexual confusion and perversions are enigma to our human character and an affront to the universe. From this, we can separate ourselves from those who obviously are not or who can be mistaken as being African and establish strong, well-defined, uncompromising lines of defense. Affirm, I have established clear lines of defense. Affirm, I have established clear lines of defense. And you say some. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate you listening today. I hope whatever we do, whatever we talk about, that you're enlightened, that you share knowledge, that you support African people, that you spend your money with each other, that you work within our community, and that you live in our community, and that whatever you do, you try to make it the best that it can be for us. I know there are many of us that don't do that. And unfortunately, it is why we are where we are today. you know, as I read this information, I sometimes wonder if we had our own educational system, truly, where we would be. I don't believe we could be here. Because everything here is designed. It is shaped and fashioned in the image and interest of those who hate us, of those who despise us, of those who wish that we would disappear after having laid a foundation with our labor, the wealth that they have in building this country. And I know there are a lot of our brothers and sisters who feel, well, our people shed blood here, so this is just, this stolen land is just as much ours as it is theirs. Now, for me, I beg to differ. You know, I think the land should go back to the indigenous people. I think everybody should go back to their origin, you know. And I know at this stage of the game, that's literally impossible for Europeans because of the destruction that they have committed against indigenous people. But for us, it is an imperative, it is a must that we return, that we return our minds, our bodies, our spirits, our energies. It is a must. Now, I'm not naive. I recognize, and I would say I was going to have African ancestry on today, and somebody laughed. Not just about African ancestry, but Ancestry.com and 23andMe and so forth. And they were saying, like, damn, they stole us. Now they want to charge us some money to find out where they stole us from, you know. And that's deep because that's real, you know. And that's real, you know. But African ancestry was trying to make sure that you as a person can identify. Because, I mean, what Ancestry.com or probably even 23andMe, and we'll know more about that when we get a chance to talk to Sister Gina Page. You know, they just say, okay, you're 23% Nigeria and you're 14% Cameroon and you're 15% Irish, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I remember when they was doing the ancestry thing with Henry Louis Gates, Skip Gates, you know, and I remember some brothers from Howard University. They traced it, but they did not use mitochondrial DNA. They used like matrilineal. And so it was the father's line. And so they was tracing their ancestors back to Ireland and Germany and Poland and so forth, getting mad as hell. You know, and that's part of the rape story, you know. And but to me, that's why, honestly, even though I'm going to have her on the program, I'm going to say this, but, you know, I'm not really, truly, I'm interested to some degree, yes, everybody should be curious, but, you know, to whether I'm part of me, because see, my father was a very light-skinned man, looked like he was a Caucasian, never knew him, so I'm quite sure from that line of the family, that's European. My mother, very, you know, she's a dark-skinned woman, very beautiful woman, miss her dearly, you know, and I'm not, you know, they're from here where I live now in Georgia. You know, they were part of that first wave of migration after the turn of the last century, you know, going north. If you lived in the Carolinas, no, if you lived in Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, you went straight north to Chicago, Indianapolis, Chicago, Milwaukee, Detroit, you know, Ohio. If you were the Carolinas and Virginia, I mean, Maryland, you went straight north to, you know, New England area, Boston, New York, Philadelphia. If you were Louisiana, Arkansas, Texas, you went straight west, Los Angeles. Those were the migration patterns of our people at that time and going into that distance. And so my people left here at the turn of last century. My mother was born in Milwaukee in 1926. I'm not sure if all her siblings were born in. I know the last few, because my mother is like of the five children. She was the third. She was the third. So, but, you know, I know we have been here now. This year, 2019, will mark 400 years of us being here. And for me, I would hope that we would use this year for some serious discussion of us being here 400 years and what is our plight still here 400 years later. Now, I'm not arguing for those who, for whatever reason, of their own, they are wealthy. No, they're not rich. They're okay. They're doing okay. Because you know, I always use that 100% to describe the situation that is happening with our people, and it's real. But there are some of us who do have a good job or a good business and who live in a gated community or cul-de-sac or subdivision, or live way out on a big, big, beautiful home, or who are athletes or are entertainers and so forth. So there is a segment of our people, but I'm not talking about them. But then again, I am, because I'm talking about us. And what I'm talking about is us coming into our right minds as African people and saying, considering what has happened to us, what we have gone through, how long we have been here, and our situation looks more dire today than it even did 30, 40, 50 years ago, I think we need to make a change. I think we need to make a fundamental change. I think we've begged long enough. We pleaded long enough. We have asked and begged and marched and sat in and prayed long enough. I think it is time to totally reject Europeans. I think it's time to kick their ass to the curb and embrace our African self. I think it's time that we talk to Africans on the continent about getting rid of despots, getting rid of dictatorships, getting rid of Europeans, getting rid of neocolonialists, getting rid of I guess I look at it like, if we don't, we will not survive. But those who have something believe that because of what they have, and because maybe they have favor with Caucasians, that they're somehow exempt. They're somehow outside of that. They're somehow protected. And nothing could be further from the truth. But there are still many of us who believe that, you know, that the life that Europeans have created, you know. Let me go back to what I read in Yeseisim, what I read earlier, you know. Because we have to understand that this is something that is going to affect all of us, regardless of the wealth or the money we think we have or the positions we think we have or where we are. Because to Caucasians, it don't mean a thing. You know, it don't mean nothing. To Caucasians, it don't mean nothing. In reference to January 5th, enemies. It can become instrumental in helping to frame our thinking in terms of our mission, to understand who our enemies are. And really, There are many of us who don't believe, you know, because what is the enemy? And that's why there's some of us who say we're our own worst enemy. And you know, I hate that. Because number one, you say and you recognize there's an enemy. Then you say, we're our worst enemy. We may have enemies, but the worst one is us. What? That really doesn't make sense. We're our worst enemy because of what we do. That understanding that the enemy of you who plans and plots your destruction mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, working 24/7, 365. But yet you say, no, they're not. Yeah, there might be an enemy, but no, the worst enemy is us. No, brothers and sisters, there is an enemy. And what is an enemy? One who works against your interests. One who is trying to destroy you. One who wants to displace you. At the same time, we have to think about how this term affects others in our community, not as knowledgeable of our story and our history. When you use the word enemy in reference to Caucasians, to Europeans, in conversations with those who've been affected by the Urugu virus, who suffered from white-itis, these Negropeans, or lost souls, they flinch, they tense up, and they instinctively feel repulsed by the utterance because they have been trained. We're just coming off the season where there's a love for mankind. There's so big all this joy, the holiday season, gift getting, and all the parties and so forth, toasting another damn supposed year of this bull. And of course, the tell lie vision. Constant commercials. I'm seeing more and more commercials with so-called interracial couples, particularly children and so forth. And you know, Caucasian man, black woman, black man, Caucasian woman. You know, they even throw some Asians in there, throw a little Latino up in there. You know, trying to get people to think that this. What a job they're duping the hell out of us to make us believe that this society is truly just like the Congress. They're hailing this Congress that has just got sworn in a few days ago. Very diverse, very multi-ethnic. They got some indigenous women. They got a couple Arab women. And of course, one of the Arab women made a statement. She's out of Detroit, which is a large population of Muslims in the country, is in the Detroit area, Dearborn, Michigan. And her statement was, we're going to impeach this, you know, MF, you know. And of course, Trump, being the hypocrite and the liar that he is. Oh, she should be ashamed. But of course, she's used all kind of language. She's done a disservice to our country. She's done a disservice to her family. You know, yeah. But so they're hailing this so-called diversity, this illusion of inclusion. And you got some of the people coming in with being very idealistic. And I understand that, you know, wanting to do this, that, and the other. And you're some who, just like the lady from Michigan said, we're going to impeach that mother. You know, I could give less than a rat's ass, honestly, because let's look at the history. Let's look at the truth. Democrat or Republican, it's not the party. It's the system. It's the overall system. The Republican and Democrats are just different wings of the same rotten, filthy, nasty bird. And that's the deal. They cannot conceptually conceive of Europeans in such terms. In their minds, the question becomes, How can the people who birth you into civilization from your barbarism that you were experiencing in Africa? We took you out of that. You should be thankful. And there are many of our people who are so thankful, like that Negro chick down in Florida. I'm so glad my people got enslaved because I could be back in Africa worshiping a tree. But now here I am worshiping Christianity and Jesus Christ. And in fact, she states that if you don't follow this Christian doctrine, you should be deported. She wants to make that something. I know it's crazy. I know it is. You know. Who nurtured you into a progressive conscious intelligence from a primitive ignorance? Who so generously shared their sperm and blood with you? Who gave you the gift of salvation? Who gave, you know, there's always that saying, if somebody ain't going to treat you right, why do you think they would teach you right? If somebody treated you the way as bad as they did, why do you think they gave you such a good religion? Yeah, they gave you something that was tied to them, that says to you, even though you suffer here now, but if you believe this and you worship this, you will get yours when you die. You will get yours in the by and by. Could they be the same people trying to destroy you? Could they? They did all these things for you. They have destroyed our minds. This is what it means to be menticide. Menticide is, what does side mean? Death. What does mental mean? Mind. What they have done to us is made being African something so repulsive and so ugly and mean and nasty that you can't even conceive or even think about being African. You don't want to be that, and you don't want to associate anybody who's with that. The concept of an enemy cannot make sense to them. And until we fully comprehend the depths of this very basic menticidal confusion, they will remain a dangerous enigma to us. Our, you know, so when somebody says our own worst enemy, I beg to differ with that subject, but there is no doubt that the enemy of us have created enemies within us. People who hate us so much, who hate being us so much, that they will do whatever it takes to appease and seek pleasure from the oppressor. They will denigrate us publicly. Some of them will kill us. And I mean, you know, I stated before that I'm really amazed at the number of brothers and possibly sisters who are in the armed forces, but yet they come out mentally sane as opposed to deeply conditioned and insane. You know, because, you know, Brother Franklin Jones, Brother DJ, there are many, the Black Panther, Brother Beninja, they're in the service, they're in the military, but yet they are African-centered. They have an African spirit. But many of them, they are trained. Just like that brother that was killed in Niger. It's called Niger. It's not Niger. It's Niger. Well, they don't call Niger, you know, Nigeria. Because that's the first five letters of Nigeria. Niger. Nigeria. Well, anyway, he was killed. And, of course, if you remember last year, all around that particular incident and how the generals and tried to disrespect the congresswoman and the family and Trump, of course, how he is, you know. And the new congressperson from New York who took a seat from a person who had been entrenched for decades, and I love it. She was on Ocasio-Cortez was on 60 Minutes being interviewed by, what's his name from CNN, you know. But anyway, asked her if or is Donald Trump a racist, and she unequivocally stated that he was a racist and stated once again why and so forth. Yes, he is a racist. And, of course, the response from the administration is to say that she is ignorant and that Trump is this, that, and the other, and he's going to do this, that, and the other, you know. But, see, I look at it as she was stating. Look at how he behaves. Look at the things he says. Of course he is. Of course he is. But you know what, brothers and sisters? They all are. There's degrees, but fundamentally they are. There are very few Caucasians, very, very few Caucasians who are willing to say, let's tear this down and start all over. Let's redistribute wealth. Let's develop a system where people and the environment are in harmony, no matter what color they have. No matter what hair texture, no matter which side of this country they're from, no, they're not going to do that. There could be some who talk about it, like a Jane Elliott or Tim Wise. They make money off of it. And there are others like that. But until they talk about dismantling it, because I don't believe it can be that. I don't believe it can be reformed. It is something that is deeply radical if that would happen, and it's not going to happen. Because to the Caucasians who maybe have some liberal leanings, who may vote Democratic, who may be more, the bottom line is they still want the control. The bottom line is just like women. So people are surprised that they have women who were running and people who were, but yet those women voted like their husbands, like their boyfriend, like their fathers, because they like the privilege that the men have created for them. That's why I don't call it white supremacy, because the white supremacists, you know, they use that term when they talk about you know, the guy that were marching in Charlottesville. They talk about that when they talk about the neo-Nazis and skinheads and other groups. They're white supremacists. No, they're not white supremacists. The president, the Congress, the Senate, the judiciary, the corporations, the oligarchy, the plutocracy, the corporatocracy, they're white supremacists. They want to maintain and sustain the privilege they created for themselves. And they'll do any and everything to make sure that that continues. And truly, one of the things they want to make sure that continues is your subjugation, your mass incarceration, your segregation, your miseducation. They want to make sure that continues. Oh, I got a caller. Let's take a call. 447-447. Good morning. Oh, nope, not today. Yeah, we're going to take a break in a minute when we come back from that break. My good brother and friend, Brother Dr. Chiki Akua, will be with us and talk about the educational program that is happening this Saturday here in Atlanta at the Auburn Avenue Research Library of American African History and Culture. Good morning, 447.
Good morning, Brother Oshi.
Good morning, Paul. How are you this morning?
Yeah, fantastic.
Well, good.
It's evening now, so for us, but morning for you. So good afternoon. Good morning. Good afternoon.
All right.
Listeners. Yes, sir. You know, as you were talking, you know, you raised this thing before and it really got me thinking. And I kind of not sat on the fence, but was undecided. Are we our worst enemy? You know, I think that some of us are definitely our own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because we've been indoctrinated, mm-hmm, into a mindset which we is not our own mindset.
Right.
It's a mindset which has been given to us.
Mm-hmm.
So we become something, you know, a lot of people use this word role model. But for me, role model is a prerequisite to the real thing. And it's not really you. It's just a role you play to fit within the system. And a model, as we all know, is a prerequisite to what the thing should be. So I think that, you know, we're always told that we should follow role models.
Mm-hmm.
But in actual fact, the role model isn't the real thing. The real thing resides within your consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It resides within your mindset. And if your mindset is not your own, then obviously you're going to be, you know, you're not going to be yourself. So yeah, you can be your own worst enemy, because it's clear,
mm-hmm,
that whenever we send infiltrators, it's somebody who looks like us.
Well, see, Paul, what I look at is who taught us that? Who instilled that in us? It is our obligation and our responsibility to purge ourselves of it. But we have to understand the vice grip, the hold that Europeans have on our minds to make us think and to make us behave and to hate ourselves and to hate each other and to do destructive things to one another. See, I look at the root cause. See, I never blame us. I put the blame where it squarely belongs, on European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. It's a worldwide global system that they want to maintain and sustain for the privilege that they have created for themselves at the expense of humanity, you see? And so I don't blame us. And yes, we have done some horrendous things to each other and to ourselves in service to this system, to maintain and keep this system going. I mean, back in our enslavement days, physical enslavement days, there was that program called Meritorious Manumissions, where if you heard something was about to happen, you would go tell the so-called overseer, the so-called master, and he would suppress it, or he would kill those who try to organize, and then they would give you a reward. You know, hell, there are some places in this country where certain areas, there are plaques. There are literally a plaque, naming Uncle Joe. We want to thank him for alerting us to a mass demonstration or a mass insurrection on this day. Da, 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 you know, yeah. But to me, that, you know, I look at what is the root cause of this issue? What is the root cause of this problem? And that is not us. It's just more of a symptom than anything else.
Yes, I do hear that. I hear that, and I appreciate what you say. But I differ slightly. I differ slightly because, like, for instance, in Chancellor Williams' work, Destruction of the Black Civilization, the glaring point for me, like, for instance, he'll talk about the Asiatics, yes, coming back into Africa. While when you really study this thing, the Asiatics he talk about is not the people we see today. These were African people, right? And Chancellor Williams also makes reference to the fact that the Africans was allowing outsiders such as Asiatics, mm-hmm, to remarry the chieftains. They then took the side of their father and overthrew the chieftains. So this thing, for me, if Chancellor Williams is right, and I think he is, started long before the Europeans come into contact with Africans, yeah? And I for me, that work is very powerful from my examination, because I always say, yeah, and it was confirmed for me the other day, I heard a European scientist say the DNA for man is 20, at least, it hasn't changed for 20,000 years, and I think he's right, because people think that the behavior today we see among each other is new, and it's not new. it's the same behavior as it was then. And I'm saying that, if, you know, Chancellor Williams, he done a very in-depth study of this, and I think his work is profound in telling us our problem. And I think he's right, because if he wasn't right, then we would need to look to others to solve our problem. I think he's, the problem actually started with us. I do believe that, 100 million percent. Because if that's true, that means only us can solve the problems, because it started with us. And, you know, he talks about, I mean, like I say, the Asiatics, were, you know, they were not Asian people. They were black people, yeah, who came back into, and, you know, and, you know, we often talk about Hebrews and all these sort of stuff, yeah. But in reality, they came with new ideas and looked down on their Africanism. You know, we don't deal with that. And if it's not, and it's still, this is another reality. I you know, maybe it's not so apparent in America, but it is very apparent here. And like I put it on this show before, certain African people who are there in Africa right now, I am part of certain groups where I know that, like, for instance, one caller who rings of one particular radio show here, he's an Igbo man. He clearly says that Fulani people do not see themselves as Africans. He says that. And this is not 100 years ago. This
well,
is
listen,
today.
Listen, Paul, I got a guest coming on in the next hour. So I got to get ready for I really wanted to keep this conversation going, but I can't. So we're going to have to pick this back up. And I would love to have this, because I think this is very important. And you make some excellent points, brother. I want to thank you for that. And because I got to go to a break, and I come back,
absolutely,
and I got Dr. Chikikua on. Absolutely. So I appreciate you, Paul.
I'll keep listening.
All right, brother. Thank you. Appreciate it. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay right here with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We are the drum.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media is... this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. But on Monday evenings, is Acres of Diamonds, followed by From 6 to 8, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Right after that, on Tuesdays, is Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 9. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. And then on Fridays, 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Welcome back, brothers and sisters. As I said to you, I'm going to have a very special guest today, and that is Dr. Chiki Akua. Dr. Chiki Akua, are you with me? Dr. Chiki Akua, are you
with me? Yes, sir, Baba Oshi.
All right.
How are you today?
I am doing fine, dear brother. How are you?
I am blessed, and want to thank you for the opportunity to be on with you today.
Well, man, the pleasure really is all mine. I've been trying to get you on, and I'm glad that you made the time to be on with me because... know you have a very important program coming up, but let me give our listeners a little bio. I know I met you many years ago when you came to Milwaukee on that cold February, snowy, but we had a good time and had a good crowd, and believe me, you made an outstanding presentation. Dr. Chiki Akua is a professor at Clark Atlanta University and author of 10 books. In addition, he provides professional development to schools, leaders and teachers on culturally relevant instruction strategies to bring out the brilliance within our children. Dr. Cole's book, Education for Transformation, The Keys to Releasing the Genius of African American Students, is a favorite among school leaders and teachers nationally and internationally. And his book, Honoring Our Ancestors' Obligations, 7 Steps to Black Student Success. He also has helped to lead over 1,000 people on tours to Kemet, Morocco, Ghana, and Senegal. Learn more about Dr. Chiki Akua at his website, drakua.net, drakua.net. And so this Saturday is ABEN, a Black Education Network. Their program is going to be at the Auburn Avenue Research Library on American African Cultural and History, 101 Auburn Avenue. And is this the first time that ABEN has presented here? Where is ABEN out of? Is ABEN out of Atlanta as an organization?
It's not based in Atlanta, but actually we've been having these regional conferences around the country. Last year, the last quarter of 2018, we went to Chicago and had the conference there. We also did Philly. And this conference actually emerged out of some initiatives by Nana Dr. Joyce King and Sister Deborah Watkins. And so a Black Education Network was birthed, and here we are. And so what we're doing is we're bringing together conscious and committed Black educators to really advocate on behalf of our children and to organize so that we can properly educate our children, wherever our children may happen to be, whether that's in independent African-centered institutions, whether that's in public schools, private schools, charter schools, religious schools. We want to have a voice in the education of our children, wherever they happen to be.
Has ABEN developed a curriculum to deal with this that can be given to these school districts as it relates particularly to history and culture?
Yes and no. As a matter of fact, the scholars and practitioners that are a part of ABEN are the ones that have developed some different curriculum resources that schools and school systems can use. And my curriculum resources are a part of that as well. But we also have resources from Brother Tony Browder, from Kobe Wilkerson, from Dr. Stephen Hancock, and also Hashim Jabbar. These are the different speakers that are a part of the conference.
Right. Follow the Drinking Gourd to Atlanta this Saturday, 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Auburn Avenue Research Library on African American History, 101 Auburn Avenue, Sweet Auburn Street here in Atlanta. And I'm quite sure, I know the space is not very big, so it's limited. So you need to get your tickets and be part of that conference to learn more about what ABEN is doing, but more importantly, what African educators are doing to educate our children for our future. Tell us why you wrote the book, Education for Transformation.
Yes, well, one of the things, when we talk about culturally relevant and responsive teaching, when we talk about African-centered education, a lot of times you may have people in the audience who have heard of that or may be slightly familiar with it, but they want to know, what does that look like in practice? And so that was what inspired me to write Education for Transformation, The Keys to Releasing the Genius of African-American Students. And my definition of Education for Transformation is simply this. It's the process of recapturing and practicing the ancient African and African-American tradition of educational excellence. Now, this African and African-American tradition of educational excellence is something that is not known by many people. Mm-hmm. This is an alien concept to many people, including to many African-American people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are not aware that we have a tradition of educational excellence. And so Education for Transformation is the process of recapturing it and practicing it. And so in the book, what we do is we outline the problem. But we're also taught that you can't have a critique without a corrective, meaning you can't talk about a problem or you shouldn't talk about a problem unless you have the solution. Mm-hmm. And so it's a solution-centered book. We go into the specific methods and practices for creating a climate of transformation in your classroom and in your school, and then the specific methods master teachers use to reach our children. And this is something else that a lot of people are unaware of, that there are, in fact, specific methods that have been proven through educational and scientific research to bring out the brilliance in Black children. What's further disturbing, however, though, is that even many Black teachers have never been taught those methods.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've discovered is that the teacher makes all the difference. I've been in schools where you walk into a classroom, the children are bouncing off the walls, there's no sort of order, there's terrible chaos going on. Students appear to be disengaged, disrespectful, uninterested in learning. And then another teacher enters into that context same students, same school, same classroom, and you can walk in there and see an entirely different experience. Mm-hmm. You see children engaged. You see children asking intelligent questions. You see them answering questions intelligently. You see them raising their hand, turning in their homework, following procedures and protocols. It's an amazing thing to see. Same students, but a different teacher. A teacher who's culturally conscious and culturally competent. And these are the types of strategies and methods that we lay out in the book, Education for Transformation.
Because they need to be culturally competent and relevant for to grab the attention of the students. Because if it's the same old, because there are some of our children, as you know, Dr. Chiki Akua, Brother Akua, that they've come through that mm-hmm. system, you know, really all the way 10, 12 years, even they don't drop out, but yet they really haven't learned anything. They haven't learned anything about themselves. A lot of them still really can't read at the level that they should. They have very little or no math skills, but yet some of them get a certificate, you know. But yet now they're out,
right?
They're out in the society, and they're basically dysfunctional, you know.
You used a very interesting word when you said drop out, because there are some scholars and researchers who have determined that our children are not dropping out, they're opting out, which is very different. Opting out means or suggests that because the curriculum and instruction is so irrelevant to my life and what I'm experiencing, that I'm opting out of the schooling process, okay? And then educators and researchers have also determined that dropping out and opting out is not just a physical thing. For example, it's reported when a child is physically not at school, right?
Right.
But a child can opt out in fourth, fifth, sixth grade, but not drop out
right.
until they're a sophomore in high school.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying?
I follow because clearly what you're saying. Exactly, because now they become they're distant. They're not. They don't want to learn. It's not. They're not being reached. They're not being touched. They're not being motivated or inspired.
Right, and what I've seen in my practice as a former public school teacher, I've literally seen students go from Fs to As mm-hmm. when their education process is made relevant to their life and circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we have to understand the difference between miseducation and diseducation. Of course, your listeners are probably familiar with Carter G. Woodson's book, The Miseducation of the Negro, even if they haven't necessarily read the whole thing, the concept of miseducation, the fact that we haven't been taught the truth about who we are and where we come from and how to make our communities prosperous. That's miseducation, okay? But Emwali Muburuti has introduced us to the concept of diseducation. And diseducation says in substance, you have lied to me so much and this system of schooling is so irrelevant that not only do I not want to learn the mess that you're trying to teach me, I don't want to learn anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a child who just completely shuts down intellectually. And this is what we see going on in our schools today. We see them opting out and dropping out. We see them having engaged in this process of miseducation and diseducation. And then we have to come in and somehow clean all that up. And it's not easy work, but it's necessary work. But when you understand these differences and what we're up against, then you can equip yourself to be able to reach and teach our children.
And see, that's what we need. But I think what you pointed out at the very beginning, how important the educator is.
Yes. And here's the other thing. Educational research has shown that the teacher makes all the difference in the world. Baba Asa Hilliard cited a study once that determined that when black children, children of color, poor children have three good teachers in a row, three good teachers in a row, good meaning culturally competent, three good teachers in a row, they outperform all other students. I want you to think about what that means now. Outperform white students, yes. Outperform Asian students. This is something, this is the achievement gap that he said nobody's talking about. When people talk about achievement gaps, they talk about the gap between black student achievement and white student achievement.
Mm-hmm.
But he said this is the achievement gap nobody's talking about. When black children and children of color have three good teachers in a row, they outperform all other students, okay? And so it's not that we don't know what works. It is that those that are controlling the mechanisms of power and resources and funding are not paying attention to these types of things and are turning a deaf ear to these types of things. And we know why that is, because they have a vested economic interest in our failure. People
exactly.
get paid.
Exactly.
People get paid when we fail. Mm-hmm. Let's just keep it real.
Yeah.
People get paid when we fail. On various levels, whether mm-hmm. that's in the criminal justice system,
mm-hmm.
whether that's in the prison industrial complex, there's a whole range of entire careers that are predicated upon our failure.
And see,
and so we're feeding that system.
Right. And so knowing that, that's why, to me, what's most important is the establishment of independent education. Because clearly
yes.
in the public school systems, the public school systems around this country, which most American Africans are in, if you got mm-hmm. a major city, the predominance of the attendance in a public school system is going to be us. And mm-hmm. also, too, others have developed. That's why, even though I had a mixed feeling about what was it, charter or choice school, when people had a mm-hmm. chance to break away from the public school system and take some of that money with them to establish a school outside of that, you know,
mm-hmm.
I had a little bit mixed feelings, because some of them who did that, their heart was not in the right place. You know, it was mm-hmm. all about the money. It was not really to take them out and truly educate them and infuse them with the knowledge of self and give them the kind of confidence that they would need to further their education. It was about, you know, paying themselves six-figure salaries and this, that, and the other. And I ain't saying all of them, but just be real. You know, that kind of thing has not made the impact after, what, 30, 40 years of it that it should have made,
mm-hmm.
you know?
This is why ABEN, Black Education Network, came to the same conclusion that I did years ago, that we want to serve black children wherever they are. We didn't want to get caught up in the politics of should it be public school or charter school or private school or African-centered school, things of that nature. I had to deal with that when I first started training teachers and consulting and so forth. I mean, I've worked with people in prisons and juvenile detention centers and so forth, and public schools, private schools, charter schools, all those sorts of different things, faith-based schools. The bottom line is we wanted to reach our children wherever they are. And certainly a case can be made on both sides of the issue. But the bottom line is our children, wherever they are still struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Many black parents, they have the resources, and they take their children out of a public school and put them in a private school, and they say, ah, that's it. I've got the solution. I'm going to give them a nice private school education, only to find that their children are still not being taught the truth, only to find that their children are still alienated and isolated and deculturated. So they say, well, man, maybe I should put them in this religious school so they can get the foundational values and different things. Same situation, Bob
mm-hmm.
Oshie.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't matter whether it's a private school, faith-based institution, or whether it's a public school, charter school, we understand as a part of the Education for Transformation paradigm that culture is the key, the critical mediating factor in increasing student achievement for African-American children. And since culture is the key, we understand that you can't have academic excellence without cultural excellence.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think, well, if they just learn how to read, they just learn how to write, if they just learn how to do mathematics and computation and so forth, and critical thinking, then they'll be okay. No, because you can learn all of those things and still operate in service of your oppressor. And so there must be academic and cultural excellence. You cannot have one without the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm a member of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, ASCAC, and mm-hmm. the number of brothers and sisters who are in that organization, and truly the scholars, the men and women who have gone through the rigors of academia and achieved great things and have kept their knowledge of self intact. And so I've stated at the conference many times that ASCAC should be part of the liberation of our people by developing a curriculum or a syllabus, just like Brother Cheeky on yesterday. Yesterday, it was Sunday, and there's a Sunday school lesson, particularly in the Baptist church, that on yesterday that was being taught in Atlanta, Milwaukee, Dallas, Los Angeles, New York, wherever, that particular lesson. Because they all wanted to get it. And I was saying to them, y'all need to do that and do it a Saturday school, that on that Saturday, these are the lessons that are going to be taught by our people to our children and adults throughout this country, you know, to prepare them. Because, see, we need something outside of the school system. Now, it's great that you're going to be in the school system. But once again, I'm not sure how long that's going to be, if it's just a class, or if it's just once a week, because we're bombarded 24/7, 365 with these notions and images mm-hmm. of us being inferior and less than consistently, you mm-hmm. know. So we need something that will arm ourselves to prepare ourselves to run our own world.
Mm. That is such a powerful idea. And I'm going to run with it and put some things together. We've already created some curriculum resources that are being used in a number of schools, both nationally and internationally. But it's so very, very important that we continue to do this type of work, because parents, you know, want to know what they can do. They want to know what's available to them. And they see, many of them see some of the problems, but don't know what to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
So for those that are interested, you can go to my website, drakua.net. That's drakua.net. Again, www.drakua.net, drakua.net, without the period in it. But on that site, you will see that we have books, workbooks, activity guides. You will see that we have DVDs. You will also see that we have a Black History poster line, 30 Black History posters, and 40 African proverb posters, so that you can create a climate of transformation in your home, in your school, in your office, wherever you happen to be. You can have these powerful pictures and images that reflect our greatness, our glory and grandeur as a people. And our children need to see that all day, every day, because when they leave our homes, when they leave our schools, or even while they're in our homes and schools, they're going to be seeing things on social media and other things that show us at our very worst.
Exactly.
And if they don't have a point of reference to bounce the bad images off of, then they begin to think the bad images is what it means to be Black. And so I've been going around the country asking this question, what does it mean to be Black? Because there's some that think that to be Black means to be ignorant, uneducated, violent, disrespectful, pimps, players, criminals, and thugs.
Exactly.
But we who have been exposed to the best of our culture know that to be Black means to be powerful, means to be intelligent, means to have ingenuity, means to be industrious, means to be hardworking, a person of faith, a person of character, consciousness, and commitment. But in the absence of that knowledge, many of our children are consuming anti-African, anti-human, and self-destructive images, and turning those self-destructive images into self-destructive behavior.
Exactly.
And this is why what we're talking about is so important.
Exactly. And see, it's very tough to work against that, because that's what the society perpetuates. That's what those mm-hmm. That's what these institutions perpetuate. And so you're trying very hard to infuse the knowledge of self and confidence and so forth about into these young people. But yet they're bombarded 24/7, 365. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we have a caller. Let's take a call, okay, brother? We have a caller.
Sure.
646.
Hotep, brother, Ocean, Hotep to your guest. You know, the funny thing is that we go into these institutions looking to educate our children and perform some sort of transformation instead of honestly setting up our own institutions. Because the public school systems and these other school systems are doing nothing but identifying our best and turning them into Negro peas. And that's just the reality of it. When you go into the public school system and they realize that you have the ability to follow orders and sit down and be quiet, they've been training you to the process of serving them in their interests. So that's why when you have situations like charter schools that in a sense separates supposedly the best students from the worst students, you know, they create certain atmospheres that really doesn't produce anything in regards to the development of African people in any of these institutions. So basically, you're going into a school system to try and correct a situation that's not correctable. You got to build your own institutions. And, you know, to be honest with you, when Brother Oshi was talking about the Saturday schools, that's how all of the nationalities that are achieving in this country are doing their thing. But for some reason, we don't want to do this. Or we're looking for the pork chop chicken eating institution called the church to open up their doors and start it. You can't do it that way. The only way you could do it is in somebody's home, grabbing two or three kids and doing it that way and then building it. Unless you have a real cultural centered family structure, like the Chinese. I'll give you a perfect example. They got a war going on right now in New York City, where I'm at, about minority children getting the opportunity to go into the elite high schools. Now, here it is, the Asians dominated. But you know how the Asians was able to dominate it? They got a hold of the test and the manner in which the test was given, got their kids together on Saturday for a couple of years, trained them, and now they take the test and pass. And the thing that's so crazy is we could do the same, but now the Chinese, because the man sees that we're not able to get our kids into the school that way, so now he's doing what I guess they call a set-aside program. The Chinese are suing them with the backing of some group, law firm, that, you know, fights against affirmative action and all of that other stuff. So, listen, the only way we're going to get ahead as the African people is if we set up our own institutions and stop looking to be part of these institutions, because all they're doing is creating a Negro plea. That's never going to work in the interest of African people. It's just like a Negro who get involved with fraternities and sororities, some of the sickest Negroes in the planet. Why? Because they believe in someone else's culture instead of their own.
All right. Brother Cheeky.
So if I can respond to that, I agree with the brother's assertion very clearly. And to that end, what I'd like to do is just to read a list of a few African-centered schools and independent black schools that I'm aware of that are doing the very work that you're talking about. Here in the Atlanta metropolitan area, we have Kilombo. We also have Ankobin Institute. We have Roots to Fruits Homeschool Collective. We have Aya Educational Institute, which is an online program that, though it's based in the Atlanta area, You can access it anywhere on the planet and be a part of that learning community. In DC, you have Roots Academy. You have Ujamaa Shule, which is the oldest African-centered school, dating back to, I believe, 1967 or 1968. In Chicago, Brother Marcus Klein has Freedom Home Academy. And so these are just a few examples of schools and people that are actually doing the work, the very work that the brother spoke of. But here's the thing. I'll never forget Baba Asa Hilliard said something very interesting. He said, it's as if we're in a boat that has sprung a massive leak. Yeah. And we have to row,
mm-hmm.
and we have to bail water and row at the same time.
Yep.
So why do I say that? Because though we have to set up and support our independent Black institutions, at the same time, while those institutions are so serving thousands of our children, we have the public school system that's serving or disserving millions of our children. And so that's why then a Black Education Network, and even the work that I do, I go wherever our children happen to be, because I never want to underestimate the power of seed planted in good ground. I'm so thankful that there were those that did that for me,
right?
In my days of ignorance, before I was exposed to the truth about our history and culture. And that lit a fire in me to do the type of work that I do now in terms of creating African-centered curriculum and resources and training parents and teachers.
Ashe. We have another caller. 602. Good afternoon. 602.
Yes, Brother Oshie, and your best son, Brother Jerry, Brother Marcus.
Hey, Brother Marcus, go ahead.
So what Jerry said is true, you know. Jerry correct, because, you know, I didn't finish school in Jamaica. I completed school here in the U.S., high school. And when I came from high school here, they gave me a test. And I aced the test. And that cracker put me in a class 6 months behind. 6 months behind, that cracker put me in the class. And it was at the end of the year, the school year, another cracker says, you know what? You don't belong in this class. You know, he said, I'm going to change you to another class. Right? Because it's in a college-bound class. And that's how I end up getting out of that class. And then one cracker, he told me, oh, you got terrible handwriting. And I said to him, I said, okay, you know, that student, how can I improve it? He said, you can't.
So he said, you can't?
Yeah, he said, you can't improve it.
And Marcus, you know why? He had no expectations for you.
Exactly.
He knew that you could, but he didn't want to tell you that you could because he had no expectations of you.
Yeah, English, that old cracker English teacher. All we did in the class was read and analyze points. And his whole thing was about sex. Reading these points and what does it mean? The river flows down the stream and this. And it's all around sex, women and sex. So, G.A. Wright, and when I went to City College in New York, we was wondering, oh, the Chinese, they always getting A's and, you know, what the hell? Them Chinese was getting the test from the graduate student, because the graduate student was close to the professor. So they would get the test at DR2 before the test come out. And that's all they... So get correct, you know what you're talking about, you know? So I just wanted to add that to the conversation. Thank you.
All right, Brother Marcus. Appreciate you, man. We have another caller. We're going to take this caller. 447.
Can I make a quick comment
before
we get the next caller?
Sure, please do.
Well, you hit it on the head with the last caller in terms of expectations, and many teachers have not been properly trained on how to set the proper expectations for our children. They have kind of bought into the lie that our children can't do better, and I really want to encourage those that are listening to go on to Facebook and friend Marcus Klein, Klein with a K, K-L-I-N-E, and what he posts is he is the founder, along with his wife, of Freedom Home Academy in Chicago. And he posts video clips of him working with the children. He has, you know, first grade children reading on an eighth grade level and doing deep analysis, not just able to read, but read with fluency, comprehending, and giving analysis of what they're reading. They have a pre-med program, a pre-law program. They have so many different incredible things going on at this school that most people would never believe that's even possible for our children, to do calculus in the third grade. Marcus Garvey Academy is another school. That's in L.A.
But in L.A., yeah.
Where,
I visited that
Baba
school.
Baba Asa showed us videos of them doing calculus in, mm-hmm. in the third grade and so forth. So these are the types of things that we need to be aware of, that there are those of our people out there doing the work. And we're thankful that Brother Marcus, who just called in, was able to make it past the limited expectations of his teacher.
Mm-hmm. 447, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Ochi. Good morning to your guests. Just to let your guests know, I'm from the UK. And what I find very interesting is that, and I always find this interesting, is the patterns that you find in America play themselves out here as well. And another interesting fact is that you've had academies. I've just heard, you've had charter schools. You call it charter schools. We call it academies. But you've mm-hmm. had charter schools, I heard you say, for 40 years, while we were introduced to academies, which is the same template as a charter school, via America, because it's American pattern. And we was introduced to it by Tony Blair as a way of improving children's education. And just some of the problems that you've discovered, we are just finding out about. So when your guest talks about he has international connections, he should consider making some connections to the UK, because there's a lot of things we have just discovering and people are trying to fight against. But as you know, if you're trying something for the first time where people are telling you it's good for you and you're realizing you're just going through the problems, those who have experienced it and have a better understanding of what the problems are now and to come may find themselves with opportunities in re-educating those people, because we are having some real issues with these charter schools and how they're structured. We are not even as far as head to even suggest that there are any black groups or organizations who even run any of these so-called academies. And one of the reasons is because they have fought tooth and nail to keep any sort of black influence, be it an organization, be it an individual, be it a teaching group, out of that so-called educational arena. So, it's very interesting listening to you, guests, and I absolutely agree. I totally agree with Brother Jay, because I've come to that conclusion myself. You know, even though I have three daughters and two sons, and even though my daughters have done quite well in this educational system, I've had to fight tooth and nail just for them to get through. So absolutely understand what you're saying, and just recognizing that this is, and I want to just reiterate this and put it out there, that this program of, I don't call it education, I call it indoctrination, is global. And I think mm-hmm. we really need to sink that in. I don't think people understand what I'm saying, that you really need to understand that. Because for it to be global, that means there are people who are working together, right, around the planet, to conduct a program of indoctrination. It's not unique to any area or a country. It is a global. And in order for you to ring out something which is so effective, so globally, they must be working at very high levels. And I think we need to work at that and fully understand that, so we can get to the root of this problem, because it is a real issue.
You're right, Paul.
Well, brother,
just like I said, it's European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege. It's a global phenomenon. It has affected the planet. And everybody looks to them as the model. Go ahead, Brother Dr. Akua. This is Dr. Chiki Akua. I apologize. Go ahead.
Yes, the brother has done us a great service by calling in, and I want to thank him for doing so, because one of the essential elements of African centered education is that we must have a Pan-African perspective, which suggests that wherever our people are on the planet, they are a part of the African family. And so we know that we have brothers and sisters in the UK and in many other places throughout Europe. While I have not had an opportunity to travel to the UK yet, I have received book orders and DVD orders from the UK. And so it's very interesting that he pointed out that they have a similar system there, similar to our to charter schools here. One of the critiques of the charter system here, as he mentioned, is that those that are granting the charters do their very best to keep Black people out of those positions of power. I know one organization out of Ohio that is in a position to grant charter school status, but they went through so many hoops and hurdles and went through hell just to be able to get that status. One of my elders out of Florida, I would be remiss if I did not mention him, was a huge proponent of African-centered charter schools. And one of the things that, he would often say is that, you know, that's where our money is to be able to fund and finance our schools. But the argument against that is that it would still be owned by the state,
right,
and controlled by the state.
Right.
So there are these differing arguments. The point is, we have to create our own systems. But even in the process of creating our own systems, how do we then provide for our children who are already in the current systems? And that's the challenge that's before us. But I really appreciate your caller's remarks in widening our conversation to a global perspective, because we do know that the system of white terrorism is a global phenomenon. And it doesn't matter whether we're in the islands of the Caribbean, in the United States, in Canada, Central, South America, Europe, Asia, wherever we happen to be, and of course on the continent of Africa, we know that there have been structures that have been intentionally set up to dominate us and keep us from rising.
And to keep us divided, to keep us fragmented, mm-hmm. to keep us at each other, not understanding that if we had an educational system that helped us understand that we are one, we're not individuals. We're a collective. See, individualism is a European Caucasian desire. I think, mm-hmm. therefore I am, as opposed to the African phrase, I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am. You know, it's just like when the Caucasian told the kids, okay, come here, you group of kids. I want you guys to run a race. And the one that gets to that tree, the first one that gets to that tree, I'm going to give them this big basket of goodies. All the kids went there one time. He said, no, I want, no. He said, no, we don't do that. This is Mbutu. Mbutu. We are together. And see, we don't, and because we're in America, and America perpetuates and espouses individualism, and because we've followed that practice, unfortunately, we have lost that African concept of being collective, of being one, of making sure that we all learn, to making sure that we all succeed, you see. And see, that's the kind of education that we need, but it's the kind of education that we're not getting. Because, you know, it's just like, you know, we still are very happy for some young person who aces the SAT test, just like what's going on right now with the sister who did okay, but then she studied, got a tutor, months of study, and then came back and she was 300 points higher. She was 900 points. Now she was 1,200 points. And so the SAT people said, oh, we're going to flag her. This can't be. She cheated, you know. And so now the question becomes, and she's saying, recognize her score. Well, they said, take the test again. She said, no, recognize my score. Hell, I really sacrificed. And I really studied.
Well, here's
okay, go ahead.
Here's the thing, Bob Oshie. It has been determined that these high-stakes tests that have been placed upon us, the organizations and businesses that create these tests, they change. You say, well, how often do they change the test?
Okay.
They change the test when Black children start scoring well. So when you have a number of Black children who start scoring well on these tests, that's when they're like, oh, we need to change the test again. I had a friend who worked for the company that produces that test that you just spoke of and was asked, how often do you change the test? And that was the response.
Mm.
And so We cannot be beholden to those tests. Now, I would, you know, say to a young person coming up, if you're desiring to go to college, yes, study for it, take the test, and so forth. But be aware that your intelligence and your power and your potential is not wrapped up in that test.
Exactly.
That's very important.
Yes, that's a very good point.
Very important that we understand that.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Because that's not the whole determining factor of whether or not you're going to be successful in college or successful, you know, when you graduate. That test is not going to really truly determine that.
And here's what it boils down to, because what I want to do is give you a definition of African-centered education, because I think this will put it in perspective. African-centered education is centering ourselves and our children in the best of African culture to do two things, to examine and analyze information and to meet needs and solve problems in African communities. Currently, we are miseducated to meet other people's needs and solve other people's problems. Mm-hmm. We are not educated to meet our own needs and solve our problems. This is a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so we must always bear in mind that we as African people were brought to America and other places around the world for one reason and one reason only, to make white people money.
Mm-hmm.
Very little has changed in that equation. Our value in this society is determined by our ability to make white people money. We have to change that value scheme and that value structure so that it meets our needs, so that we can meet needs in our community and solve problems in our communities. But that's what African-centered education is all about, which means we then have to step back and say, well, what does our community need? What do African people need? Well, we need proper health care. We need the establishment of businesses in our community. We need counselors, you know, and therapists. So you take an inventory of what our people need. We need manufacturing. Once you establish what is needed, then you set up an educational program and paradigm designed to meet those needs and solve those problems. But right now, we have somebody else determining what the needs and problems are. And until we wrest power from those who are making those determinations, then we'll be going in circles.
Well, the fact of the matter is that we have to, just as Jay stated and I've stated, we have to get out of it. Now, my contention is it's going to be hard to just get out of it. So what I had proposed earlier is a educational process that's independent of that, but also when you go into it, when you go into the public school system, the private school, choice, charter, whatever, you have a foundation and a knowledge of self. So when you go into it, you can discern whether what is being taught to you will be relevant for you, because you come with a foundation and a base knowledge of who you are historically and culturally. So, you know, even though we can't have all these institutions here and what else, but we can at least infuse and inject our young people with that particular knowledge. And so therefore, even though those teachers may not have those expectations of them, we as parents and we as a community, we have that expectation. We promote them. We are going to push them, you see. So even though they go to, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and that's why it's so important, that definition of African-centered education that I gave, it says centering ourselves and our children in the best of African culture. So it's incumbent upon us as the adults to center ourselves first. Mm-hmm. And there may be some teachers or parents who are listening who may say, man, I agree with all this, but I wasn't taught the truth about our history and culture, but I know my children need it, okay? And so the materials that we have developed are made in such a way, they're very user-friendly, so that the teacher or the parent goes on the journey with the student. Okay. And so whether you're talking about our book Reading Revolution, which contains 90 reading selections set up in the standardized testing format, but it's about our history and culture. It increases reading comprehension, cultural awareness, vocabulary development,
along with critical thinking skills and character development. It's very user-friendly, and the teacher or the parent goes on the journey with the student. Whether you're talking about our book, A Treasure Within, which is a book of three short stories in which young people have encounters with ancient African ancestors to learn about our original morals and values.
Mm-hmm.
My son has a book called Sankofa Kemet, My First Trip to the Motherland, which details his first trip to Kemet. It was an 11-day journey that he went on where I took him,
beautiful.
You know, a group of other students throughout Egypt. We have a book called Words of Power that contains almost 200 quotes and proverbs from powerful African people and powerful people from all over the world. I mentioned earlier about the Black History Poster Pack, 30 Black History posters with quotes and things on them from many of our heroes and sheroes. And mm-hmm. then the African Proverbs Poster Pack, which contains 40 posters in that pack, which shares a lot of that mother wit and wisdom that many of us may have come up on, but that many of our children have not received.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to establish ways of transmitting that to the next generation. This is what Baba Isilir called intergenerational cultural transmission. Those are just some big words to say, passing on best of what we know.
That's right. Handing it down. Now, Dr. Joyce King is going to make a presentation in Is Gentrification a New School Pushout? Do you have any idea? I know gentrification is happening across this country. It's happening here in Atlanta, particularly where I live. I live near the West End. I live here on Cascade. And I know that they're gentrifying these neighborhoods. They're coming back in, pushing us out, you know. And from an educational standpoint, obviously, these schools will be transformed.
Mm-hmm. So it's funny because that's a great title for a presentation, Is Gentrification a New Pushout? We know already that the answer is yes, but the reason you want to come to the ABIN conference is because you want to get the details of how it's happening so that you can prevent it where you are, so that you can resist it and prevent it from happening. So very important, and I can't say enough about Nana Joyce King. She was my dissertation advisor when I was a doctoral student at Georgia State University. But more important than a dissertation advisor is that she's a Jegna. She is a master teacher in the best tradition of our ancestors, who has done tremendous work in terms of developing African-centered curricula, as well as developing a cultural critique of what's going on in our schools. So she has critique and correction to what's going on. And she is an amazing organizer as well, who is one of the conveners of a Black Education Network.
You know, we've run out of time, dear brother. That's, I need to get you back here again, man. I really do. And I know your time is very precious for all the things that you do. I really appreciate it. I was also going to give you, our listeners, a rundown of where is Dr. Chiki Akua, because you're going to be at ABIN this week, but then you're going to be at East Orange, New Jersey, then South Dakota, at Brookings, South Dakota, Evanston, Illinois, Chicago at Loyola University, Clovis, California at the Middle School Leadership Conference. You're going to be at Clovis Community College in February 25th and 26th, and then 26th, rather, Reading Lee College in Reading Lee, California, Clovis School District. And then you're gonna, in March, you're going to be at the Barbara Sizemore Academy in Chicago. And then in April, you're going to be at the Center on for Math in San Diego, California. And then November 11th, Shippenburg in Shippenburg, Pennsylvania. So you're going to be all over the place, dear brother. But do me a favor. Give me that gentleman's name again, Marcus Klein, K-L-I-N-E. Is that it?
Yes.
Okay.
Freedom Home Academy, Marcus Klein. Yes, powerful, powerful brother. You may want to have him as a guest on your show. He's amazing at what he does, and he's doing some incredible things there. And let me also give the listeners, for those that want to register for this weekend's conference here in Atlanta, you can go to abenforace.org. That's A-B-E-N, as in a Black Education Network. The number 4, ACE, as in academic and cultural excellence. So ABIN, the number 4, ACE, .org. And that's where you can register for the conference this weekend. if you're interested in getting some of our materials, whether it's the Black History Power Pack, the Educators Power Pack, the Black History Poster Pack, or the African Proverb Poster Pack, or any of the different books that I mentioned, like A Treasure Within, Reading Revolution, Words of Power, A Kwanzaa Awakening, you can go to my website at drakua.net. That's www.drakua.net. drakua.net. Thanks so much, Bravo Oshie, for having me on today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chiki Akua, and I, you know, for all that you do and all you have done and will continue to do for our people to educate and instill in the minds of our people who they really are. Appreciate you, dear brother. We end this program like we end all our peace and blessings. We end this program like we end all our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, we appreciate you listening. Shemhotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie. Abibi Fahodia means our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodia family, peace. Until next time.